You know, every year I look forward to singing O Holy Night with my church family. And I do because it assures me, reminds me of all that I need doesn't originate on earth. It originates in heaven. Hope, peace, joy, love, all those things that I need doesn't come from earth. It comes from Jesus, who came to earth 2,000 years ago. And with that assurance, I can go through life and understand that what I see and what I'm experiencing around me here and what I'm witnessing, those things that cause so much distress, so much sorrow, I realize God can speak and change hearts and give us an opportunity to share what God has given us with others while he has us on this planet. I'm Dan Reed. I'm the campus pastor here. It's a privilege to be able to go through this passage today, to sing songs together, to actually paint a picture of the perfect Christmas. And literally, we're doing that today. Joanne, who just led us in worship in O Holy Night, she is an artist, and we are going to see her rendering of the picture perfect Christmas as an artist as we go through the story today. Have any of you ever heard of the Joshua Bell experiment? If you haven't heard of Joshua Bell is a gifted violinist, a prodigy who was playing since age 4 and made his debut at Carnegie Hall at age 17. The Joshua Bell experiment happened 11 years ago. On January 12, 2007, Joshua Bell emerged from the Washington, D.C. metro and positioned himself beside a wall by a trash can in the metro station. He's a young man in jeans. He wore a long-sleeve t-shirt and a Washington Nationals baseball cap. Pretty nondescript. He had a small case. He opened that up. He removed a violin. He placed the open case down in front of his feet, threw a few dollars and some pocket change in there as seed money, and he began to play. For the next 45 minutes, Bell played Mozart. He played Schubert as over 1,000 people streamed by, most hardly noticing. If they had paid attention, they might have recognized that this man played at such a level that he was like a one in a generation. They also might have noticed that the violin he played was a rare Stradivarius violin worth over $3 million. Earlier that week, Joshua Bell had sold out the Boston Symphony Hall. Seats were going for $100 a piece. But here in the subway station, he played and he received a whopping $32 in tips while he was there. 27 people stopped long enough to listen and give a donation. 27 people caught a glimpse of the beauty that came from a man who played this violin by a trash can in a metro station that morning. And it was part of a project that was put together by the Washington Post, and they called it an experiment in context, perception, and priorities. The Washington Post wanted to know, in a banal, which means an ordinary and dull setting, at an inconvenient time, would beauty transcend? 2,000 years ago, a night started out as a common night, dull as any other night, and that night turned original, it turned fresh. That night became a holy night. Beauty had come to earth. God entered our world in the most perfect way. People were caught up in their own context, in their own perceptions, in their own priorities, so few saw the beauty that happened that began in that manger that night. And today, as we think about our life here on the peninsula, most of us are caught up in our own context, in our own perceptions, in our own priorities, and most of us hardly stop to listen. Sure, we might throw a tip as we walk by, or sing a catchy Christmas carol, or maybe raise a glass, but we fail to see the beauty of what happened in the manger that night. Our hunger for something new, for something original, for something beautiful, for something that transcends us, is not satisfied in the cultural Christmas expressions that that we've come to know. Sadly, most of us miss out on only what God can give us this Christmas, which is hope and peace and joy and love, all of which came to us through the birth of Jesus on that picture-perfect Christmas morning. So who is this Jesus? Let's start this picture-perfect story at the beginning. We're going to read some words written by John, who was a fisherman by trade and one of Jesus' disciples, one of his early followers. He starts out, he says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So that word for God in the Greek word is logos. Logos came into our English language in words like logic or logical. So why didn't John say, "In the beginning was the Son," or "In the beginning was Jesus," or "In the beginning was the Lord"? Why logos? Because logos strikes a chord deep within every culture that John knew about. To the Greeks, the logos meant the source of life that makes life work. The logos was the integrating principle behind the entire universe, which makes the laws of nature and physics reliable. To the Jewish philosophers, the logos was the agent of creation and the guiding force for all divine activity in the world. And for most Jews, like John, common Jews, the logos was the word for the living God communicating to humanity. And John shows them his hand when he tells them that this logos, the word, is a he. And he was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. So John says the Word's a person, and the Word is in essence the eternal God, equal with God the Father in every way. The Word spoke the universe into existence out of nothing, and all knowledge and all innovation and all wisdom were created by him and revealed through him. And another detail, lest I forget, the Word is Jesus. So what else does John say about the Word? The Word was the light of life. In him, verse 4, was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So the Word is life, and he imparts physical life to all living creatures at creation on earth, but for people who are set apart, made different by in the image of God, he imparts more than physical life. He imparts life in the form of intelligence and spiritual perception, our conscience, our subconscious, our soul, and our spirit. All this comes from the Logos. It's a light that allows us to look out at our world and see right and distinguish it from wrong, to see good and to see evil, to see man's folly and to see God's glory. We can look out and we can see a picture, and sometimes that picture is beautiful, and it's as if we're looking at a beautiful mountain or a flower or an act of love or an inspiring song or a painting that is being made by an inspired artist. The light not only allows us to see things ourselves, the light also allows us to look not just out, but inward and see the strange contradictions that are in our souls. The light allows us to see our capacity for doing good as well as our bent toward evil. The light allows us to see that we hunger for hope and wonder why we still struggle with despair. Or how we hunger for peace and wonder why we wallow in anxiety and fear. Or how we hunger for joy and wonder why we feel trapped in a place of pain and sadness. Or how we try to satisfy that insatiable desire to be loved and yet find ourselves lonely and distracted. In John's day, people believed that in order to have life, you needed four things. You needed air and water and food and light. And John, in his written account of Jesus' life, tells us that Jesus is all four of those things. In chapter 3, John tells us that Jesus is the breath of life. In chapter 4, John tells us that Jesus is the water of life. In chapter 6, John tells us that Jesus is the bread of life. And here in chapter 1, John tells us that Jesus is the light of life. So, what makes the picture perfect Christmas? It's that the true light came into our darkness and invites us into his new family. Verses 9 through 11, John says this: the true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. So the true light comes into the world, shines on everyone in the world. So the true light exposes the good, exposes the bad, exposes the ugly. And when that light does that, it exposes also the deceit in everyone's heart, the ugly stuff that we would like to stay invisible and we don't want others to see it. The true light reveals sins that are deep within us. And that kind of exposure is more than most people can handle. And John says that's why most didn't receive him when he came. So Jesus came to earth. He came to bring light into our lives, to not make us feel bad, but to expose the dirt so that he could clean it up. I read about a man named Stephen Kingsley of Craigmont, Idaho, and he ran a carpet business which offered a special service for removing pet odors. Some of us can relate to that, who have pets. So to show potential customers their need for this service, he would darken the room, and then he turned on a powerful black light. The black light caused the urine crystals to glow brightly. Got a pic visual of that right now? So to the horror of the homeowner, every drop, every dribble can be seen, not only on the carpet, but on the walls and in the drapes and the furniture and even the lampshades. So Kingsley said that one homeowner said, "Stop, shut the lights off. I can't bear it. I don't care what it costs. Please clean it all up right away." And the problem, see, this is it. The problem was there all the time, but it was invisible until the right light exposed it. Now, wouldn't it have been cruel if Kingsley would have said, "Hey, I'm exposing all this dirt in your house. Too bad for you." And he packs up his light and he goes away. No. Instead, he brought the light so that they might desperately want his cleaning services. And that's exactly why the Word came to earth. He brought the light of his presence, not to make us feel bad, but to expose the dirt so that he could clean it up if we wanted him to. So my challenge, please let him clean you up. Stop trying to mask the pain. Stop trying to hide the sin. Instead, welcome the Word. Welcome the true light. Welcome Jesus into your life to help you, to clean you up. He came to clean us up from the inside out. Scripture continues, "Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God." So if we believe that Jesus is the true light sent by God, we become true children of God. We become spiritually born again. Our citizenship is transferred. Our citizenship is transferred from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. And it's God's will that we receive Jesus and we believe in his name, that we believe that Jesus is the Logos, the true light, and because Jesus is the true light, we will never be lost when we follow him. A favorite Christmas card of mine says this: "The Word did not become a philosophy to be discussed, or a theory to be debated, a concept to be pondered. The Word became a person to be followed, enjoyed, and loved." So verse 14 sums up the picture-perfect Christmas here. John says, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. This rational principle behind the universe, this source of all life, the executor of all divine activity, came into our camp. And in the Hebrew language here, it's that he's literally pitched his tent among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. So John assures us, and it's interesting, his choice of words here, that this grand miracle isn't just something that he was told about. He wants us to know that he and his fellow disciples were eyewitnesses. John wants us to know that Mary's child, this man from Galilee who he walked with, who he ate with, who he played with, had real flesh and blood. And he didn't just have real flesh and blood, he was also none other than the maker of the universe. The one who laughed so hard that religious leaders thought he was a drunk. Or the one who got so tired and thirsty that he had to ask a Samaritan woman for a drink of water, who was at the very beginning the one who created hydrogen atoms and oxygen atoms to create water in the first place. The perfect Christmas is a celebration of this grand miracle that theologians call the incarnation. Incarnation means in fleshness. The picture perfect Christmas is a celebration of the infleshment of the Creator. Charles Wesley, the 18th century, tried to explain it in his hymn when he wrote, "Veiled in flesh the Godhead see. Hail the incarnate deity. Pleased as man to dwell with us, Jesus, our Emmanuel." So Dr. Rachel Eckhart from Berlin, Germany, helps us understand this grand incarnation. She invented something called the aged man suit. So the aged man suit was invented by her so that she could help younger medical students understand and empathize with their elderly patients. So Dr. Eckhart's aged man suit had ear protection on it to stifle hearing, had a yellow visor in order to blur eyesight and blur colors, knee pads and elbow pads that stiffen the joints, a Kevlar vest which presses uncomfortably against the chest, and it was this custom-made suit to simulate the physical consequence of old age. So when Dr. Eckhart straps his suit on one of her medical students, she tells him, "Welcome to old age." And this aged suit was made these young medical students feel like, you know, old creaking AARP members, you know, for a little while. And her hope was that they would develop this feeling for what it was like to be old, to motivate doctors to go into geriatric care. I'm in my third, I think, of life here. I would love to have that age man suit for my staff here at Foster City to just wear for one day so they get an idea of what it's like on the other side. So this age man suit, it's a perfect picture of what Jesus did when he came and lived among us. He put on a limited, flawed, clunky human body suit so he could truly empathize with us. He experienced our pain, our limitations. He lived among us as one of us. So there's one more part of the story here. We know Jesus' friend John was a fisherman, and he wrote what we've just read tonight. But John also wrote about another John. The other John is also known as John the Baptist. And John the Baptist came to announce and prepare people to receive the true light that was born on that picture-perfect Christmas. Verse 6 through 8, John writes this. "There was a man, John the Baptist, sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning the light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light." So John the Baptist, he was a powerful preacher, and many people came to hear him, and many people thought that John was the true light. So he had to keep reminding people that he wasn't the true light, but that his purpose was to bear witness to the light. And John, he did his job. And like John the Baptist, we have also been called to bear witness to the true light. Listen to another friend of Jesus. His name is Peter, another fisherman. And he says this about being a witness to the true light. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession." He's speaking about us. "That you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light." So today, may the praises that we sing, the sights that we see, the sounds that we hear, the words that we read help us to understand the picture-perfect Christmas. And Joanne, how's that picture going over there? It's looking good. Thank you. You guys get to see it. I can turn around. I can't see it. I don't get to see it where I'm at. The picture-perfect Christmas brings to us hope, peace, joy, and love. Those are perfect qualities. And they don't come from earth. They come from heaven. And they come from heaven and given to us who are imperfect people. And he does it anyway. He gives it to us. I want you to meet a friend of mine now. I'm going to have her come up. Her name is Deborah Oler. Deborah, come on up. Deborah, if you don't know Deborah, she is a ministry-minded person here at CPC. She leads a particular ministry called Bags of Love. And Bags of Love puts together these hygiene bags in order to go into some of the darkest places on the peninsula, reaches into the homeless community up and down this peninsula. And she has a relationship with them. She pastors them. And that's expanded now into other items that you provide, and you have opportunities to pray for them. And you're involved in the recovery community here as well. And also your Kiwanis Club, President Kiwanis Club here as well. Maybe you got some brothers or sisters. Is that what you guys call each other in the Kiwanis Club? Anyway, tell us a little bit about your story, because you weren't always in place of light that you're in now, to bear witness to the light.
No. I feel like I was actually born into darkness. I was born to an addict father that abandoned me at birth. And when I wasn't being raised by my grandmother, I was in an environment where there was addiction and partying. There were no positive real role models at the time. And when I was 7, not only was I molested, but I was diagnosed with a congenital heart condition and had the first of many surgeries. I started smoking marijuana when I was 8 years old. And by the time I was 18, I was addicted to crack cocaine. I went to jail many times and to prison 4 times. I married an abusive man and gave birth to his son in 1996. I left my son with my mother so that I could pursue that addiction further. Finally, in 2009, I found CPC, and it was then that I came to truly know Jesus as the light of my life and began to learn and grow spiritually and serve as a member of his family.
So 2009 wasn't the first time you were introduced to Jesus. Tell us a little bit about how you grew toward 2009 when you received him fully.
Well, actually, I got acquainted with Jesus when I was in Chowchilla State Prison. I was baptized there, and out of 4,000 women, I was chosen to be one of the 150. And, but unfortunately, what ended up happening was I left Jesus and my Bible on the bunk when I left. And I went back to my old friends and my old ways. And what ended up happening was I was desperately unhappy. And towards the end there, I attempted suicide. It was not so good. In my darkest moments, I would pray to God to please help me. But what I was looking for was a magic moment when my addiction would be lifted and my life would be fixed. I didn't understand that the miserable consequences of my choices, my incarceration, my life-threatening seizures due to my cocaine use, and disappointing the people that I love the most were his answers to my prayers. I had to be completely broken before I was actually willing to surrender to him completely. Jesus knew who I was, and he knew who I could be, and he had been chasing me for years. And he desperately wanted me to want him, but he wanted me to long for him. And in 2009, that was the year that it actually happened. That year, my Narcotics Anonymous sponsor, Sandra, had told me about CPC's higher power, and I decided to check it out, and that was where I finally got it, that I could live in the light of life, that is Jesus Christ. In conversations at higher power with a gentleman named Steve Arell, he had encouraged me to also start attending services at CPC. At CPC, I found a new community and a new life, and also my calling to serve God through various CPC ministries, and in the recovery and in homeless communities with my son and other friends. In 2009 was the turning point for making center of my life, for living as a new member of his family and embracing him in the light of life.
So there's a lot of ways that a person can bear witness to the light up and down this peninsula. It's just fascinating to me that God drew you back into some of these really, really dark areas. Tell us a little bit more about that, your calling back into that, those communities.
I believe that he knew that I was geared exactly for that, because I'm not afraid, because I've been where they're at. I could be one of those homeless people that I serve. My life can be a testimony to them, a testimony of hope for those who still suffer. I'm proof that change, grace, and joy are available to all those who live in the light on the new family of Christ.
So now that you're a follower of Jesus, is everything just perfect in your life right now? I mean, is everything? I can
surely
talk about my life,
Justin.
But let's talk about your life. Yeah.
No, actually, I have a congenital heart problem, as I spoke of earlier, and that won't go away. And it's likely that I will be placed on the waiting list for a heart transplant very soon. And sometimes I get really scared about that. But I don't think that Christ saved me from the pits of darkness to let me die. I think that he saved me so I can bear witness to others. And I rely on the scripture that I can change. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. There's simply no description of the amount of my gratitude to God for sending his son to die for me and my sins. And the light of life and the new family I have today, only he could have shed the light on my darkness and rescued me. And I want everyone to remember that the real true gift here at Christmas is Jesus. He is the present.
That's the picture-perfect Christmas. Thank you for sharing your story. You know, we all have our stories, and we have our opportunities to bear witness to the light. So God's writing your story and using you. And it's just a matter for us to stay sensitive to what he's doing and where he leads us and how he might use us until he comes again.